Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass Piancy. I am here, as usual, with my partner in crime, Bennett Tomlin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Cass?
I'm doing fine. It sounds like I'm doing a little bit better than you. Busy week this week. We're here to talk about the El Salvador Bitcoin volcano bond that has been proposed. I mean, it's a reality. It's going to be a reality. I don't know when it starts trading, but it is a reality. It is going to be $500 million US dollars and $500 million in Bitcoin. This entire thing was proposed by Blockstream, Tether, and Ifinex in collaboration with Nayib Bukele and the El Salvadoran government. 500 million, like I said, 500 million in Bitcoin and 500 million in US dollars. But that 500 million, Samson Mao, who helps run Blockstream, said that it's going to be a $500 million market buy of Bitcoin. Those were his exact words, which would be a terrible, terrible decision for Nayib Bukele to make. That is not how you should purchase that amount of Bitcoin. So if Nayib Bukele is listening, maybe ignore what Samson Mao said. Don't market buy. Look into OTC desks and look into trying to get the best price and best liquidity that you can at any given moment instead of lump sum purchasing $500 million in Bitcoin. But anyway, let's talk about the intricacies of this bond in more detail. Bennett, if you can.
Sure. Let's. As always, when discussing the plans of Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, it's a little bit difficult to discuss the intricacies because they seem to be invented on the spot by this charismatic strongman. Like, consider for the fact that you can purchase the bond using actual dollars, Tether dollars, or Bitcoin, but then it seems that the Bitcoin are going to be converted back into cash so that they can then be used to buy Bitcoin. Which seems like a strange decision, but let's just accept it and move on. Half, as you mentioned, is going to be used to purchase Bitcoin. The other half is meant to be used to build out mining and energy infrastructure on this one volcano in El Salvador. At the convention yesterday, or in a spaces, I don't remember in which place he actually announced it, Nayib Bukele also decided that there's going to be a Bitcoin city built next to the volcano, which it's going to cost $17 billion to build, and so is not going to be from this bond, but is apparently connected in some vague way that is a little bit difficult to parse. Meanwhile, Bitfinex is writing the law for El Salvador to now offer tokenized securities so that Bitfinex can become the first provider of tokenized securities in El Salvador. And they'll be the ones where you can trade the bond. It's very strange and very confusing. And the places where I expect there to be details, there aren't.
I know that a lot of people like to trade crypto and a lot of people like to trade stocks. I think even maybe some of our listeners are wise enough to have investments in mutual funds and other alternative lower risk investments. But I do think that in general, bonds are less well understood by the public these days. And these are something that were, I think more people were familiar with them in the 40s, 50s, and 60s because they were utilized often by the U.S. government. And the government would reach out to the public. There was something called, for instance, war bonds, where the U.S. government needed money to fund World War II. So they put out bonds with a certain rate guaranteed, and it was essentially your patriotic duty to purchase these bonds so that the U.S. could fight the Nazis. And they were quite successful, and people did well on them. There's nothing – it's not to suggest bonds in and of themselves are shady or anything. It's just that I think they're not something that most people are very interested in these days.
Well, yeah, in a low-rate environment where you can get, at least recently, pretty incredible returns in the equity markets, eye-melting returns in the crypto markets, and somewhat more tepid returns in the bond market. Bonds have, at least among retail traders, certainly fallen out of vogue. This one may perhaps be somewhat different because with part of the way it's structured is at the 5-year mark, they're going to start liquidating the Bitcoin they purchased using this bond, and half of the profits that are made from liquidating that Bitcoin are then paid back to the bondholders, and the other half go to El Salvador. So you could potentially get these extra dividends that give you part of the upside benefit of Bitcoin with these bonds.
Yeah, but now the counterpoint to that, which I think is a really valid and fair counterpoint, is that El Salvador already has sovereign bonds that they've issued that give far better rates than the Bitcoin Volcano bond offers. The other bond that's set to mature in 2035 or something like that, I believe. I don't think they're set to mature at the same time. But that one's offering, from what I heard on Bloomberg this morning, is something like 13%. So that one is a far better offer in terms of percentage return. It's twice as good. And then on top of that, you're talking about how this bond allows you to have some exposure to Bitcoin. But the reality is that there's this other El Salvadoran bond with a better offer for percentage. So if you believe in the government of El Salvador, and even though most of their bonds right now are essentially junk status, if you believe that they're not going to default on any of this and they're going to follow through on their promises, you would get the one that offers you 13%. And if you also think Bitcoin is a good idea, buy some Bitcoin. So this is what I've come to understand, is that this bond seems to be a really good way for Tether to put something in its reserves that aren't Chinese commercial paper, aren't weird loans from other cryptocurrency companies or who knows what. This is an entire nation promising a bond, so it seems like, at least on paper face value, a better asset class. And then they're also allowing themselves to get high rates of returns on these, quote, safe investments, right? Because it says, what did they say, 146% over 5 years or something like that? I don't know what the promise was, but yeah.
Yeah, that was Samson Mao. He's like, our Blockstream models suggest that Bitcoin will hit 1 million within the next 5 years. And when it does, the implied APY of your dividend goes up to like 130%.
Is the Blockstream model just the flow to...
just the plan B, just yeah, the stock B. to flow, just drawing a line through the price, like, look at it, it's gone up before, it'll go yeah. up.
Or Eric Wall's famous rainbow chart. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they're utilizing.
That rainbow chart will haunt Eric forever.
Yeah, well, he made it, you know, he earned it. By the way... You know, Eric Wall is a great follow. I think he probably disagrees with us on most things, but he is really well informed in the space and has.
And he made that chart as a joke to point out how bad the model was. And then people are like, oh my God, it works, because regressions work, people. But yeah, so it seems to me that there's a few groups of people who are most likely going to be interested in making sure this bond is fully subscribed. And those are, as you mentioned, Tether, who can put this government bond effectively in their reserves and treat it as that. It is Blockstream and people associated with Blockstream who want to prove the legitimacy of their platform. It's Bitfinex and people connected to Bitfinex who want to prove the validity of their securities platform. And it's people interested in getting citizenship in El Salvador. Now, since the first Bitcoin law was passed, there have been a few different numbers passed around, 25K, 100K, 3 Bitcoins. But the idea is that at some point in the near future, it'll be possible to effectively put an investment like that into this bond or something like it and get El Salvadorian citizenship. And so I think that for a subset of people who are crypto rich, who can make this investment in Bitcoin or in Tether, it may make sense for some of them to do this for that benefit in particular.
Yeah, I've also a lot of people talking about the citizenship clause involved in this, which I do think is interesting. El Salvador does have a extradition policy with the United States of America. But as people have pointed out, Nayib Bukele is a charismatic strong man and doesn't seem prone to bending to the will of any non-governmental agencies or other governments. So despite the fact that El Salvador really relies on the U.S. dollar and remittances from the U.S., I could see him hypothetically letting criminals come to El Salvador and put up shop and not extradite them to the U.S. if they wanted them.
Well, we talked about this in episode 11 when we tried to talk about El Salvador the first time, how, at least to me, it seems like there's a pretty meaningful possibility that Bukele's end goal is to be able to print their own currency again, to have some kind of cologne or something for El Salvador again, where they control the money supply again, effectively de-dollarize. And so I think most of their movements around Bitcoin and all these different things is just to get them to a point where they can accomplish that. And I don't think that the final version of that will look like just a Bitcoin note redeemable for Bitcoin at the El Salvadorian Central Bank. I expect them to basically use Bitcoin as a reserve asset as they start to print a new fiat currency.
Well, they have a lot of huge plans. This bond is supposed to build this blockchain city that'll bring a lot of foreign investment and a lot of money to El Salvador. That's going to upgrade their infrastructure in terms of new energy supplies from geothermal resources. It's going to be a Bitcoin logo shaped city. They're going to have a nice B shape. I don't know, out of apartments or who knows, but that's, you know, that's cool. And it's also located by a bay. There's supposed to be, I would assume, some port access and stuff like that. So this would be a really massive infrastructure project for El Salvador. And I don't know. I guess I've not spent time in El Salvador, so I don't know if that's something the El Salvadoran people think is a good way to solve the inherent issues in their country. Maybe they do. And if they do and they support this, then I say they, you know, good on them and go for it. But it doesn't scream competency to me.
I was reading up on this city a little bit because I find these blockchain cities fascinating. And it turns out that the previous Salvadorian government, before Bukele came to power, made a deal with some real estate developers in China to set up a charter city on the Gulf of Fonseca, where they would effectively lease about 10% of the total landmass of El Salvador for 100 years so that China could have basically a North American port they controlled. The location, proposed location for this Bitcoin city, is the same location as this original Gulf of Fonseca project that was being funded. And at the time, Bukele said that the proposal was a bad idea. Privatizing a territory like this was not productive. However, now he seems to believe that instead making it this tax-free zone with only the value-added tax to incentivize cryptocurrency entrepreneurs and wealthy individuals to come to this area is meaningfully different and will better benefit the citizens of El Salvador, or at least Bukele's interests in El Salvador.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not here to speak ill of Bitcoin, and I think even Frances said she understood. Frances Coppola, when we had her on, was in agreement that this seems like, while a risky move, something that kind of makes sense. So I also am not opposed to the idea of using Bitcoin, of making it even legal tender. I do find these kind of outlandish plans and these shady counterparties for bonds to be steps in the wrong direction. And when we were talking about El Salvador in our episode on our own, I think we were waiting, right? Because everyone's trying to understand how Bukele is going to operate and what this is going to mean for El Salvador. I think we still have to wait more. I don't think we have all the answers we'd hope for by now, but a lot of it is troubling. And I don't know. The bond measure, for instance, seems to benefit Tether the most, and I guess doesn't necessarily hurt El Salvador as long as the bonds sell, stay at par, and are able to be paid off, paid back.
Yeah, I mean, if you're right and they previously were having to offer 13% and they're able to fully subscribe this out at 6.5%, this is a materially better arrangement fiscally for El Salvador, right? Because they'll end up paying less. And they're only basically...
They still have to pay out that other bond, though.
Sure, sure. I think what you're pointing to is kind of that since we did our first episode in El Salvador, there has been continued developments that have not given us greater confidence in Nayib Bukele's ability to execute on this in a way that's good for the people of El Salvador. I think having a president who goes on Twitter and calls himself a dictator is probably bad for most countries. And I think that what he's doing with these bonds and these agreements is going to make it extraordinarily difficult for El Salvador to raise money from the IMF at any point in the near future. And so at this point, this to me seems like a commitment from Bukele to basically tie El Salvador's survival to his ability to raise funds from individuals like Blockstream, Tether, Bitfinex, and their connected entities, rather than from the more traditional sources. I hope that works. When I say it out loud, it feels like a pretty massive gamble to be making, you know?
Yeah, I don't think most like risk managers would be comfortable with that kind of decision, let alone people leading countries. You don't really hear about decisions like this very often. And it is odd that the city ultimately will cost $17 billion. Who knows where the rest of that is going to come from? Are they hoping for more remittances? Are they going to be... Honestly, I don't really understand. And what if the price of Bitcoin doesn't go to a million? What if it goes to 100,000 and then lingers at 60,000 for 4 years or something?
What if it happens to be when they start selling in 5 years, we've had another crash like January of 2018, fell 80% off its peak and it's only worth 15K when it was purchased at like 60K. Like there's a whole bunch of assumptions built into this that are worrisome. And like the failure of El Salvador to get what the $1.3 billion from the IMF about a year ago was nearly an existential threat to the country's finances. And now they're proposing at a convention or in a spaces or whatever that they're going to build a $17 billion tax-free city with the only tax being a small value-added tax. Where is that money coming from?
Well, I guess hopefully there's enough really wealthy crypto venture capitalists and hedge fund managers who are thinking about getting citizenship elsewhere.
Hey, as long as El Salvador provides pickup trucks full of jackbooted, well-armored soldiers, I'm sure Bitcoiners will flock there.
Yeah, it's been really odd. This whole thing has been really odd. It's an odd offering from Tether, IFINX, and Blockstream. It's an odd offering from El Salvador. It's something that should fail, but won't.
Like Leo.
Yep, like Leo and a million other bad Bitfinex ideas. And it's a weird experiment that is happening because of a lot of issues in El Salvador. I don't think it's fair to think that this is like a Nayib Bukele thing. This is like a long time coming. El Salvador has had a lot of problems and needed to fix them. So I don't know what the end result of all of this is going to be. I can't help but think to myself that if U.S. regulators were at all wondering if they should get more involved in Bitfinex's and Tether and other crypto businesses' inside information and what exactly is going on, I suspect they're more inclined now because they're getting involved in actual national debt with countries, with countries that the U.S. has deep-rooted relationships with. So,
and relationships that are currently somewhat tense. There's discussions about like cutting off foreign aid to El Salvador, and so El Salvador making this decision, cooperating with these entities, is very likely, I think, to bring greater attention to these entities.
Yeah, I think they look at that as a good thing. Maybe it is. Maybe that brings them attention from the financial world and a bunch of cash from institutions that I'm not imagining would give Bitfinex money, but maybe they will, and Blockstream. But but maybe they will, and this will be like a big success for them. And honestly, I hope so. I hope it's successful for everyone, because ultimately, the people who are relying on this the most are the El Salvadoran people, and I don't want to see people who have been hurt by the West making brash and weird decisions for centuries getting hurt again by brash and weird decisions. So hopefully all of this works out for everybody involved.
Yeah, agreed. And that's largely my fear. There's a very narrow path to success here, and many of the failure cases potentially leave the El Salvadorian people worse off than before. I'm reiterating what I said in episode 11, is that I hope that these funds go where they're supposed to, and we see the infrastructure build out and like the ability to capture some of this geothermal energy and that type of infrastructure, because that is the type of thing that can have a long-term economic benefit for El Salvador.
On that note, if you are an American listener, happy Thanksgiving, and we will be joining you next time to discuss some weird, abstract, and stupid use cases for NFTs that we have heard passed around by some famous short sellers. For everybody else, hope you have a good end of November, and we will catch you soon.